Who's here today?
Tiana's here.
Sarah is here as well.
Oh, man. It's all three of us.
For sure.
When was the last time it was all three of us? I honestly don't remember.
When we interviewed Bruce Miller last Saturday.
Besides that, like for an episode.
Oh, it's been a few weeks.
Has it been that long?
Yeah. I feel like it has.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think last week we were supposed to, but then you kept
rescheduling.
I couldn't.
Sarah had to do things.
Responsible stuff.
I had an anniversary to celebrate. So.
Sarah had to celebrate her anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
Priorities.
Adult time.
Oh,
adult
shit,
time.
Without children. No, I didn't mean it like that. Yes, I meant like, no. I meant it like child-free time.
Like you mean it, but
no, stop making things dirty, Justin.
I don't think he made it dirty.
He goes,
this was
adult time.
Ew.
He said it like that. We need to edit this out.
Maybe.
We're editing.
I told you I have a no edit policy.
I know. It makes me nervous.
Also good to have to know that I'm the guy in charge of the record button, so whatever's in is in.
Oh, great.
Here we are. So let's do a couple things. I don't know. She was just mouthing something.
Okay.
I don't know what it was.
I'll write it down.
She's going to write it down. Oh, we're secretly communicating. Now.
Well, you're edit
Smart
free
lady.
Now.
Smart lady. I like it. All right. So I want to give a few social media updates. First of all, I think we have to thank all the people that submitted all the questions. Nice.
Those Bruce Miller questions were solid questions.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Even ones we didn't use. It's always one of those. I feel bad because we can't use everything.
I know, we
can't
use them all, but they're
but
so
we would
good.
Be there for, like, hours.
I mean, really, if we were just asking our own questions, we would be there for hours.
Yes.
I know.
It's
so,
a problem.
What I did here is I made a list of the people. I'm just going to say them because people like the shout-outs.
You do that because
I'm sure
I butchered the names I said.
For whatever reason, names I'm okay with. I'll probably screw these up now that I said that, but usually I'm... like, I think... Ninochka, Mom of Chaos, we said correctly. She called us out on Instagram and said, I loved your pronunciation of her name. So I'm going to assume that means that we did it correctly.
Or we did it wrong, but it was fun.
But she liked it, yeah.
So here's who we have. And again, we apologize for not being able to use all of them, but, you know, Bruce has a life. Annika Joy Best Wittenberg. That's all one person's name, I'm assuming, or I typed it wrong. Yasmin Naomi Weinstein, or Weinstein. Ashley Ashuni, Libby Wyatt, Two-Thirdsky, our friend from Twitter.
I know.
That we don't know, still don't know if it's Two-Thirds Sky or Two-Thirdsky.
It's Two-Thirdsky.
But we're
going to
go with the
Come
Russian,
on.
The Eastern European pronunciation.
I like it
because it sounds like a hockey player.
It does sound like a
right?
hockey player. Tracy Tabata, Winter Hollow Farm, Kelly McIntyre, Ninochka, Mom of Chaos, which is still the best name, Kristen Tursky Tatelman, Chelsea Megan Matthews, Lemeria, Monica Patel 411, Melinda Acton, Ricky Stevens, A Home Project, Ann Gorison, Heather Rose, Yasmin, oh, you got on here twice, lucky you, Melanie Pearson, Dominique Bjorlin, that's a B-J-O-R-L-I-N for those keeping score at home, Bjorlin is what I assume that is, Lindsay, Buckle, Cluett, Beth M.C. 1101, or Beth Mc 1101, I don't know, or Beth Mc 1101, whatever you want it to be. There's so many options there, I wanted to get them all in. Letitia Bellini, Natalie Taylor, there's only a couple more. Daria, Blake Walton, Norman Lieber, who, unlike Sarah, was able to identify the classical music that was playing at the beginning of episode 11, I believe.
Thank goodness for Norman.
And this is either Gileadian or Gileadine. I don't know which one
it's
to pronounce
Gileadian,
it.
It's Gileadian, surely.
You think it's Gileadian? It's Gilead, E-A-N. So
surely.
You fill that in however you want to. And the MVPs for the questions. Who were the ones that made us ask the question about the children of Gilead? Were Tina, Rosalina Garcia, Carolyn Hynut, and Vivian Owen. But the real MVP is Tiana. Because in the middle of that question, she had this light bulb moment, like, wait a minute, what the fuck? Which is what led to her asking Bruce, hey, how do you decide what we get to learn about the Canadian stuff and all the other stuff that June is not actually there? And when do we find it out and how do we find it out? Which led to what I'm now referring to as our collective Keanu moment, where we had the answer and we were all like,
whoa.
Yeah.
Because, and it didn't really come through in the interview. Like, we played it pretty, pretty well.
You
we
couldn't
like,
see our faces.
We were all looking
our
at each
Keanu
other like,
faces.
Oh, we see it.
We all, both of us.
Yeah.
Both
we
of
were
us.
Like, oh my God, that's for real. So, for those of you who have not listened to the interview yet, it is available. and you should listen to it. It's fantastic. Just under an hour. We tried to cover as much ground as possible, which is awesome because usually they call and they're like, 30 minutes. And usually they stay on longer with us because we try not to be assholes, which I hope we achieve every time. But Bruce was awesome. Answered a ton of stuff.
He was great.
We finally gave up on the when are we going to get this, when are we going to get that, because the answer is essentially whenever June gets it, you'll get it.
Yeah.
And for those of you wondering about this question, essentially what was asked was it started as when are we going to learn about more about the children of Gilead and their lives and stuff and things. And Bruce was like, well, it's The Handmaid's Tale. So essentially what he does is he writes it, and when June knows it or has known it or has been told by somebody else or feels comfortable reporting it, as he said, that's when we'll know it. So essentially he is writing it just like the book, which I think, like, is one of those things that's, like, hiding
in
plain
sight,
right?
Well, I mean, it's still, it's beyond what the book does, because, you know, at in the book, you are hearing June's tapes, although you don't know it until the end.
Right, but he's also writing it that way for the show.
Right. Until the end. But you don't have the knowledge that they were, whether or not they were recorded after the fact, ex post facto, or as things were coming up, you know.
Right.
So I guess what he was saying is more like, these are definitely like ex post facto. Like, you have all of June's collective knowledge, whether that's something that maybe she was in a good situation for a while or somehow miraculously escaped and like learned all of these things or had conversations later with people. So like, that's how we can sometimes get windows into other parts of the world.
It made sense to me because I felt like he, sometimes as a writer, you kind of have to give yourself like parameters. Like, you have to give yourself.
You gotta have rules.
Well, that's so once what he referred to it as, I have a hard and fast rule, essentially, is what he said, something like that, about how I write the show, which was that.
Well, and then that kind of curbed all of our other questions. Because, like, so many other questions were about that. And then I was like, well, there goes everything that I was going to ask you, because now I know what you're going to say.
Yeah.
And I understand why. And I'm glad he's doing it that way,
quite frankly. It's just one of those things, like, it makes you just totally rethink, like, the stuff you've already seen. It makes you think differently about the things that are coming up, like, the things that you have, like, with all the Canada stuff, like, from this episode, so episode 12. Like, that's all stuff that she's, like you said, either heard from someone else, that she witnessed, which clearly not the case, because it timeline-wise, it's happening at the same time she's not in Canada. So someone has relayed that to her. So the mind-blowing part of this, right, is to think, like, we're watching this show kind of from the future. Like, we're seeing...
Yes.
This show is already happening. Everything you're seeing has already happened. And they basically, like, if you took somebody's diary and just put it and made it a show. And that's how the show's operating. And
I think
it's funny because there's no indication of that. I don't know how you actually, like, do that without it being kind of cheesy. And, you know, presenting it and that, like,
Dear diary.
Or, like, you start the show with, like, somebody finding some tapes in, you know, Maine or whatever.
Right.
Which wouldn't you could do that and have it
would
be,
suddenly be very Anne Frank.
It would.
Yeah.
Right? And there was a few Anne Frank moments this week in episode 12 with her being upstairs a couple times, different times when there were guys coming downstairs and, like, all the noises and you were like, oh, yeah. But, I don't know. That question was just, like, crazy because it's a few things, right? It's like everything that we've seen again has either been told to her, but also could be not the way it really happened if you think about the show really happening in the world, right? Because you're assuming that she's got reliable information or that she's relaying it reliably, which doesn't matter in the context of the show because we only know what she knows, therefore we don't know anything
else.
Yeah,
I think the show assumes that you trust the narrator.
Yes.
And that you trust that the narrator was getting somewhat legitimate information from other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But hearsay is hearsay, so, you know, you kind of got to think about that.
Exactly.
Yeah, how colored was it, depending on who she heard it from?
Yes.
I would really want to know how she heard about all the stupid shit Fred does when she's not around.
Maybe. Right.
Rita or Serena, and they're like,
you get
trading secrets at the end.
Yeah. It just makes you wonder, like, where all the information came from that you've seen so far. Right.
Right.
Like,
I was just thinking, like, Lydia's thing and...
Right. She's
how did
like,
you
know.
You know,
maybe she finds records on Leon's.
That could be.
Hmm.
There's records on The Handmaids.
Sure. That's a good point.
It's just so many possibilities. wrapped up in that one thing. It's just kind of crazy. It's like, you know, the whole first season, couple episodes of, like, Luke's escape. Like, how does she learn about that? Unless he told Moira and then Moira tells her. It's like, you know, it's just wondering how all the information, it's taking those past events that we've already seen, past to us, like, that we've seen in previous seasons, and trying to figure out how they connect back to her. Yeah. Like, how did she get that information to relay it? Because essentially what he said literally was that she knows all of this. She's put these tapes together, and that's what you're seeing. You're seeing what she knows.
Right.
So somehow she got that information.
Right.
So the fun part for me is to try to figure out, well, who the fuck told her?
Right.
How did she learn about it? You know, it's just like this thing that makes you go back and go, wait a minute. This is just crazy. I love that shit. That's awesome. So thank you, Bruce. And thank you, everyone, again, who sent in questions. And, yeah, take a listen to the interview. It is up, and it will be there. It's just under an hour, so not too bad. But, yeah, we covered a lot of ground. There were some interesting things beyond just that question. We learned about why he chose the shoes he chose and the outfit for Jezebel and where all that came from.
Oh, yeah. That was interesting.
Stuff about the new book, which I thought was super interesting.
I was so excited to learn that Bruce Miller is also, like, in total awe of Margaret Atwood.
I know.
And is like, and we're friends. Right. And I was like, this is great.
That's why I wanted to ask you that question about, you know, it was like the first time when you had to, like, sit down with her and be like, here's my idea for your show.
I know. This is Atwood. Oh, my God.
I just can't
imagine.
It's just insane. So let's dive into this episode, episode 12. One more episode left. So overall, let's do a little ballpark here. Overall thoughts on this one. We're coming off of, like, the big, you know, action-packed thing of last week where all kinds of shit went down. And so this is kind of the aftermath of that.
Yeah. I was really excited to see Moira.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Great scene. I missed Moira.
Like, she went off.
Yeah.
Amazing, right?
I've missed Moira.
I feel like there were several, like, great one-liners like there haven't been. So much the season just, like, daggers delivered. That it's like those things you can make memes and t-shirts out of. You know, those kinds of things. Yeah, I thought she was outstanding, you know, in the limited screen time that she had. So I was super happy to see her.
Yeah, it was. I also always think it's interesting to see a little of the inner workings of, like, how does Canada handle this situation? Because it's weird. I mean, there's no getting around that. Yeah. There are some people that have done terrible things that they also kind of want to help.
Yeah.
And, you know, people that maybe they would normally want to help, but given the circumstances, can't. So I think that's really interesting every time.
I don't know. I thought it brought up more questions for me, really, than answers, which I guess is sort of the point of that sort of situation. I mean, like, the whole time I'm like, what is, like, when there were certain things. Overall, I thought it was good, but there were parts where I thought, I need to know more about this because why is this happening? Like, I just had a lot more questions in this episode than I normally do. Because I know the show is purposefully vague in a lot of ways because, again, we're getting this information through this narrow lens.
Yeah.
But most episodes, I don't sit there and go, what are the parameters of this visit? And what does that mean? And why can't she say that?
Confusing.
And so the whole time I'm kind of doing that, which isn't normally my mode of watching. Like, normally
I
just kind of take it.
I really want the rules for those relationships.
Yeah. Like you said.
What are they allowed to do? How often is this going to happen?
I assume we're talking about, like, the Serena.
Yeah,
the Serena situation was very tense for me because I was like, so she gets to visit the baby? Are they going to give her the baby eventually? I mean, like, what is happening?
It doesn't seem that way.
There's a lot of speculation
but why
about
would she,
like, how Serena's going to come out of this all.
Yeah.
And I do not see, and I said this on Facebook, I don't respond to a whole ton of things when people ask questions because then I get into, like,
the whole thing.
The whole thing. but I don't see a way that she comes out of this not having some kind of punishment at all.
Right.
I don't think it's going to be like Serena turns over Fred and she's, like, scot-free.
I agree. I don't think she's, like, going to prison for a long time, probably, but I think, yeah, there probably will be ramifications for the part she played.
Right.
The other big thing that happened in this episode that led to a lot of questions for me, also not surprisingly, about, like, the government in Gilead, is, like, one of our social media followers commented before this episode, like, wouldn't it be crazy if now that what's his name that Christopher Maloney plays is dead, and Fred is like in Canada in handcuffs. Wouldn't it be amazing if Commander Lawrence is now like the head of everything in Gilead?
Well, that's kind of how that meeting.
That's kind of what happened. Yeah. So I'm so sorry, whoever you are, listener that commented on the page. I really wish I could remember your name so I could give you a shout out, but you were right.
Oh yeah,
and it is bonkers.
Well, it's another one of those things where it's sort of a function of their youthfulness as a government,
company or a country. Know? Yeah.
And, it's one of those like line of succession things where we've even seen like within their own established ranks when nothing was going on that it was still a little fuzzy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or a little fluid on whose power was really there.
And also, I kind of got the impression that like the fact that, Fred and the guy from DC were kind of down on Commander Lawrence generally and wanting to restrict his powers and make sure that he was, kept in line was like not a widely known fact, apparently. It's just like the conversations that we witnessed between them might have been the extent of it.
That's what made me question, again, a lot about this episode, because if power is happening in little fluid pockets, that doesn't feel like a strong situation. Like, Gilead is much stronger than I think it should be for how unorganized these pockets seem to be.
I think that points to, like, the one comment that makes that make any kind of sense was the episode where we had the scene with Moira and Emily when she first gets to Canada and they go to, like, protest the Prime Minister guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he makes the comment about Gilead still having the military might of the United States, essentially still having all the firepower and the ability, but now it's in the hands of, like, super crazy people, right?
That's well, that sounds familiar. My thing.
Right. And so I think, I think it's, they're still unorganized and young, but they still have that's like the one thing they have, right?
This is I very also true. Feel like this is a reflection of our current governmental system where people are out like every other day and some nutso people have the nuclear codes, so maybe some similarities,
like,
there
there's no one leader and like
because that's apparent.
Technically our president is the the like chief officer, what is it called? The commander of the military.
Yeah,
like
commander in chief.
There we go. Cool. I know things. anyway, I knew what it meant. I just didn't have the words. But anyways, so who is that person in Gilead? Because we kind of don't know. And then now one of them is in Canada. The other one's dead. And they don't even know that he's dead.
Yeah.
And
I imagine it's a lot harder. I mean, they're not a dictatorship, but they're clearly not a democracy.
No.
And so that seems like a really difficult situation in which to have a clear line of succession and leadership.
Right.
Because nobody is being voted to the top spot.
Right.
Or ostensibly voted by a outdated voting system. Anyway, there's not that. And there's not like a clear line of like this person's son and then that person's son.
Mm-hmm.
There's not an obvious way to pass power.
Yeah, for all the things that they are, they do have organized, as far as their society goes. That doesn't
That's
seem
not one of them. Yeah.
One
yeah.
of them, at least on the surface, no. that we know of via.
It seems like just the tactical controlling measures are the only things that they really thought through.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So let's dive into this. So we open this with the ominous music, which I always find is a great sign of things to come.
Oh, yeah.
And June kind of standing in the room. I think we're behind her at this point, and she's got the gun that Lawrence
gave
to her.
Great closing music on this episode, too.
And she's kind of messing around with it, trying to be all kind of gangster stuff. She's very, the first, it's like you would be if you were pissed off and had a gun, but you really couldn't do anything with it because there's nobody to shoot. Just pretending you're fucking
I've never thought about what that would be like,
you're trying
but
to be
okay.
cool, right?
Sure.
That's how you would be. That's how I imagine I would be if I was a pissed off handmaid, but I didn't have anybody kill, at the moment. I'd be pretending to kill all of them in my mind.
Yeah, you gotta mentally prepare
it's
yourself.
It's like the scene from Taxi Driver, where he's, in the mirror, and he's, pointing the gun
Interesting.
At himself. But she didn't go full on, you talking to me. They didn't do all that, but it was kind of the mode she was in.
Not what I was thinking when I was watching this episode, but now I'll probably never be able to get that from my mind.
I'm sorry.
Same.
I apologize. Drop a little Scorsese on you. So then we hear the van pulling up, and she's doing this whole voiceover. It's like, first you hear the van pulling up, tires in the driveway, doors closing, voices, footsteps, then boots on the stairs, boots coming. And I couldn't tell if, like, she imagined it, because, like, Eleanor opens up the door, and then it, like, stops. And so I couldn't tell if it was, like, a thing in her head, which they like to make me think is happening, but very often isn't. So she just opens the door and tells her that people downstairs, which clearly we know, and they want tea. And that's really all they're there for. Well, they're there to talk to Lawrence, not her. And June is, like, paranoid as anyone who had just committed murder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially in Gilead.
In her situation,
in her situation would be.
Not relaxed.
So, yeah, and Eleanor is, like, in one of those modes where she's like, come on.
She knows
she's
what's
like up. She's, like, with it, right?
Yeah, and, but, you know, you probably don't know that when she first bursts into the room.
Oh, you don't
I know,
like,
I know.
I immediately was like, are there really, like, is that really what they're here for? Or is she not really with it right now?
Yeah, and this episode is kind of the farthest gone outwardly, I think, that we see her, aside from when she was standing screaming in front of the school with the kids.
I still think it's
when
during
she put the gun
ceremony.
To his head. Oh, the ceremony.
At least, like, I don't know, maybe it's just because, like, well, and maybe I'm just putting that in the context of, like, really with something to fuck up. Because in that scene where they're all together, like, and she starts talking about, we can save all the children.
Oh.
And you're like, oh, shit. And her and June and Lawrence are just like.
Yeah, because it was other wives, not, you know, men in trucks.
So, June's going to go serve tea. Now, this leads to a couple things where June is the one to serve all the things all the time because mostly she wants information.
Right. Does nobody... I keep expecting I somebody to be like, why is your handmaiden here, dude?
I know, right?
I know.
Because in the beginning of the series, like, they were just, like, to not be seen, generally, by polite company. And now she's everywhere and nobody seems to mind.
Well, she and Rita make no secret about the fact that they're listening. They practically, like, stoop down and, like, cup their ear. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, if I was in the commander's position, I'd be like, are we good here? Can you go back into the other room now with the tea? Like, you know, like, not that.
Thanks, ladies.
Yeah.
I'm usher them out with his hands.
My thirst is quenched.
So,
goodbye.
A couple interesting things. We kind of overhear this conversation as June is kind of creeping down the steps of the three commanders, Lawrence and the two other guys. One happens to be old One-Arm Putnam. Back at it again.
That's what I thought that was.
And some new guy that we don't know. All we know is that his kid's in the hospital. He's super tired.
Oh, I was thinking that this was when the wives showed up. But
no, that's
later. That's later.
Yeah.
That's later. That's fun times. So they're essentially what this scene boils down to is they are there because they're trying to figure out how to handle the fact that it's, quote, open season on commanders because Fred and Serena have been taken by the United States government via Canada.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure out how do we retaliate.
What's his name in D.C. is missing at this point.
And, Winslow is presumed missing, even though he is literally dead.
Very dead.
But... Well, the interesting thing here is that those two seem to be trying to figure out how to get Lawrence to help them to keep these guys from trying to blow shit up. Like, because they're going to the war council, and they seem to be like, we need you to help us, like, cool these guys off.
Yeah.
Because everybody else is
And,
like,
you know, when these are the reasonable ones, like, you really gotta wonder who's on that war council.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because they refer to it as an act of aggression, and he says we need to be patient and react. So they're all kind of hashing it out, but none of them seem too eager to blow shit up like the war council does.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's everybody's got to make a mistake at some point, and in their case, it's a good choice is the mistake for
them.
So
the other thing we learn when June goes to get the tea is that Billy is in.
Plane is a go.
Right. So I could not tell what baked good
I was wondering
I thought
that
it was
too.
Tarts. Like tartlets kind of looking things?
I thought tarts were more like tiny pies.
I thought that's what those looked like to me. I could be wrong.
I don't remember
So
at
if anybody
all.
Could identify the baked good in question, please let us know. I want to know what Billy's baked good of choice
We're not up on all of the baked goods.
We are not. I like them. They're delicious.
Yes, I like to eat the things. I don't usually know what's in them because I don't cook.
I try not to.
I will eat all of the gluten-free things.
There you go. So, as we said, June takes the tea in. The other commanders are just pissed off. Lawrence is being very Lawrence at this point, right? He's kind of got his Lawrence mask back on where he's, like, being the cocky, shifty kind of guy trying to be the biggest dog in the room.
It probably reassures them, honestly.
Well, and
that's,
he knows,
you know, that's the that Lawrence they know, you know?
Exactly. Well, and
he rightly.
Winslow's gone and Fred's gone, so he knows in his head that he's the kind of biggest man on campus, for lack of a better term. Even though he still feels it out to the point where he's like, you know, my security clearance has been taken away.
Right.
So, you know. And those guys are like, well, we can remedy that, Mr. Lawrence.
Like, if I was in his position, I'd be saying stuff like that, too. I'd be like, weird. Because I can't, I can't breathe outside of the, you know, property lines of my house that I took from someone else. But now you want my help, you know? Like, I don't know. I thought he was kind of rightly.
Oh, I agree. In that situation, in I don't know how else you would handle it, because he's trying to figure out, I think, too, where he stands.
Mm-hmm.
And by kind of floating that out there, he kind of at least is trying to see if they'll give him an olive branch of, oh, you want power, we'll give you back power, because none of us. It's like one of those where I feel like it's a, none of us want to do this job, and this was your idea, so how about you help us fix this job?
Right.
And so they said they're going to present it to the Council of War, which I said sounds like the next, like, title of the next Marvel movie. It's like Thor, Council of War.
It sounds kind of
ridiculous.
I thought it sounded like, you know, that movie from the 90s, The Skulls, where they had, like,
Society Fraternity.
Like, on one of the walls, like, the Council of War.
Starring Mr. Craig T. Nelson and Paul Walker, R.I.P.
Yeah, I saw that in theaters, guys. No, no joke. Didn't. I was 15. Yeah. Creed sang the opening song. Oh, yeah. Well, no, it was
not that. I didn't see it.
No, no, no. It was definitely 1997. It was maybe not 97. I feel like the internet's going to call me out. Oh, no. I said it an exact word. It was in the late 90s. Okay, friends.
I do recall lots of frosted tips.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Oh, there, man.
Frosted man tips.
That, sure.
That
well,
was
and
more, that was. Yeah, that Pacey. Was a rough era. For
Pacey is in that movie.
Pacey
yes,
is totally in that movie, yeah. And it was very much in the era of Dawson's Creek, so I was in there. Okay? I was watching that movie.
You were your Pacey
all right, then.
Person?
Well, no, I was actually more of a Paul Walker fan. But again, I was 15 or 14.
Wasn't Pacey in a relationship with his English teacher?
In the show on Dawson's Creek?
Yeah, but I didn't watch that many seasons. That right? I just heard about it.
Yes.
Okay.
From what I recall.
Anywho. Anyway.
Back to the Handmaid's Tale.
Right.
Via
so
Skulls.
So June is, like, all pouty in this, like, and stressed and just the whole thing. And then he calls her out on it. It made me really happy because I was like, why is she so stressed right now? And then he basically is like, you got away with murder. Fred and Serena are toast. This is the best day of your life or
well,
something like that.
She didn't know about Fred and Serena. Even when she's in the room at that point, she doesn't know about Fred and Serena until he says something about Fred and Serena.
Okay, but he did.
Right.
And she was still pouty after that.
He did.
Like, I'd have been like,
they said some things to allude to it. Like when she was overhearing them, you could hear
a little
bit of that. Oh, you're
right. They didn't actually say exactly what happened.
Oh,
I did not really realize that. In my mind, they said
they don't name them by name until.
But they.
The one commander says.
When they do imply that, that like, they suspect that DC guy had the same fate or something.
Right.
Like, it
right?
was that they're, like, sneaking in and picking up commanders right and left.
If I had heard that as June, I'd have been like, yes! Yeah,
I don't think she knew, like, specifically Fred Serena until he said that to her.
Oh, okay.
She, like, puts on this, like, I'm trying not to dance across the room face. And he just, he talks to her about how she might. And then One Arm Putnam gives her a little quip as he walks out the door. He's like, you might be the only one happy about this. Well, how do you respond to that? What are you supposed to say to that? Like, nothing?
I don't know.
One Arm, cool.
Well, yes, especially because I murdered the other commander that you were talking about. So I am very happy about that. That's how you respond.
And an alternate take, she would have been like, how's your arm? Or, like, reached out to shake
That's
his
hand. That's always the answer.
Put the wrong hand. Like, oh, man.
It is this right one that he's missing, isn't it?
I believe it's left.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm trying to think, when you see him, we're seeing him from across the other side of the room.
Yeah,
and
that's
this
true.
This arm that's missing, so it's left arm. So, June and Lawrence have a little talk. And he said she's off the hook, or off the wall, rather, is how he refers to it.
Yeah.
Again, he's back to being kind of normal.
He's
Lawrence,
back to punny.
Joke would be funny. because they think that Winslow's gotten taken just like Fred and Sarita, which is. Always a good timing. Hey, you murdered a guy at the same time everybody's disappeared. Nobody knows where they went. And thanks to the Marthas who cleaned shit up.
The
like,
very,
well,
very efficient and effective
also,
Marthas. I want to hire all of them.
Also, I was told by several people on social media that, yes, the Watchers are that big.
Wow.
Somebody said that they used to work at a larger hotel and that their washers were not as big as that washer, so that place has to be, like, massive. But then there's somebody else that said they worked on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
And they said it were definitely that big.
Whoa.
Right.
That's crazy.
I had no idea.
So, June is off the wall. Says Quippy
Commander. Did anybody mention, did they have, like, a furnace large enough to fit a human in one of those, too?
I don't know. I did not ask about the furnace / crematory.
Yeah, don't incriminate yourselves, but I am curious.
Anybody know if you can fit a body in a furnace?
Someone made an interesting comment. They're like, the bones don't burn, so what are they going to do with the bones?
It's all down at the bottom.
And I was like, why do you know that?
Well, that's true.
They probably watch a lot of TV.
Yeah.
I forget there's a movie.
There's a lot of, like, movies Holocaust and crime shows and
guy.
Things.
Who's your favorite guy? The guy that played
I feel like
Kevin.
Bones surely had an episode that hinged on that.
That would be Tom Hardy.
Yes, Tom Hardy. There's a movie with Tom Hardy that's also a book, and I forget what it's called, but it's in Boston, and he is a bartender, and there's a whole mafia thing with the bartender. Anyway, he killed a guy and stuffed him in his furnace, like, way back when he used to do bad things, and the bones are still there, so that's one of those other things I remember.
Interesting. Yeah.
Now you know, guys.
There you go. The more you know. Ding. All right. So, June, clearly, again, had no idea about the Waterford stuff, and Lawrence says they are awaiting trial on war crimes, and he says, I guess they didn't bring 52 kids.
It was kind of like... it was, like, so uncomfortable, but also kind of funny.
Oh, it was. And I think it's because I think he knows that even if he brings 52 kids, it's not going to fucking matter what he does.
No.
Mm-hmm.
At all. So
an architect of Gilead. I mean, surely.
Yeah. The guy who, like, even Bruce Miller kind of alluded to the fact.
Of course, that their, like, holding cells are, like.
Oh, we're going to get to that later.
I was going
to
say, we need to talk about that. I definitely.
You're
a little extra.
Dial
it back. Calm down.
Calm it down with the kindness.
Come on.
We don't want to do it.
He's in a suit, for God's sakes.
So, now it's time to discuss the plane time. And Lawrence would, like, hey, move the plane up. Like, June knows when the plane's... Like you can just call him and be like, hold on, hey, Billy.
Excuse me. Excuse me, Mr. Pilot.
Tomorrow. She's like, hey, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
And so that's when he gives her the line after she's pouty about Fred and Serena are toast. And you just got away with murder, so not a bad morning for you, which is true. And so then she sits on the couch and has a little laugh to herself.
Yeah.
Like you do.
Well, like you do when you get away with murder, you know. That great feeling.
Oh, is it?
I was totally joking.
Totally joking. I feel like it's going to become a podcast.
Yeah.
A podcast about the true crime that Sarah confessed.
No, I was going to say, please don't bring up true crime podcast now.
I think Patton Oswalt? Somebody tweeted one day that at this rate, Netflix is going to start paying people to murder people so that they'll have more shows to make.
Yeah.
I was like, that is so true.
Oh, so great.
Like, HBO's in the same boat. Have you ever looked at just the documentaries part of HBO?
Yeah.
Holy Jesus.
It's so weird to me.
It is.
I know.
It'll make you terrified to leave your house. Like,
Can't do it.
So next scene, June walking in the rain. They also give them red umbrellas, which is the first time I believe that we've seen red umbrellas. I don't recall if this is the first time we've seen red umbrellas.
I doubt it.
No, we have definitely seen them before.
I doubt it.
We hear some sirens, which now that you've committed murder, every time you hear someone walking up the steps or sirens, fun fact.
Clinch up.
Clinch up is right. Like, oh, not me? Cool.
Right, I know. Right. That's because I didn't do anything wrong.
That was for those guys, not me. All right. So we have to go to Loaves and Fishes again, and we see Alma, because we always do.
Yeah,
you know,
she's always
she
there,
out.
Apparently.
Alma just pops out of the floor. She's got, like, a special transporter there. Like, she doesn't even know when she's going to show up. She just all of a sudden is there. She's like, what? Oh, okay.
Like the time traveler's wife, but for Mayday, right?
She's just like, bam, you're there. What? Oh, I guess it's time to talk to June. And so they're essentially discussing the plan to get the kids out, almost trying to figure out how to get her kid out of Amherst because it's too far, apparently. I don't know how far that is from Boston. I know it's near, but I guess too far, as Grover would say. Near or far. You're welcome, sir. June tells her to try. What is that? Like, hey, you can do it. But she was doing it more because she had this look on her face like, I'm not going to get my kid out.
Right, she was feeling down.
Right.
Yeah.
June's like, we'll fucking do it. Let's go. You can do it. Rah-rah. Team. Go. Cheer. Fight. Win. Then we see Rita for, like, the longest we've seen her since probably the Washington, D.C. episode. Not very much this season.
I know.
So her and June have a little talk over some very, as I put it, phallic-looking carrots. I didn't feel like there was
I didn't notice that. Okay.
I did not notice that either.
And normally I am the first one to notice that stuff.
Well, I feel like in Gilead, anytime I see anything that looks like that laid out the way that looked like that, it just, it's just what it says to me. So.
Okay. Says the person who won't let me use the word straddle outside of a sexual context without making it sexual.
You can.
It was even used in the article that way.
What specific reference are you guys talking about?
You were there.
I don't remember.
It was like our first year together.
Saying that she is a, quote,
straddle generations.
Oh,
because I am an elder millennial.
No, me too.
Yeah.
Totally.
See?
But
very neutral word.
She knows.
Okay. Well, I read an article. The author used that very same language.
I do
language.
Think straddle generation is a ridiculous term for it.
Wow.
Well, but what do you say? I am not a true millennial. I am an elder millennial.
Millennials? I don't know.
Whoa.
But I'm not a Gen Xer. I'm definitely not. But I have tendencies. I have touches.
I feel like you're more on the millennial side of the
split. Oh, for sure.
Definitely. And I do not feel more on the millennial side. No. I'm too cranky for that.
For sure. But I had a student teacher who was a millennial, and I'm definitely not 100% millennial. For sure.
Yeah. It is a fine line. Like, it's hard.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let us know what you call yourselves out there.
Yeah. Other not Gen Xers or millennials. Those of you who clearly remember growing up without the internet, but also have known how to use a phone seemingly forever, smartphone.
I didn't send my first text message until I was 21. So yeah. I'm not, like, super
yeah,
millennial.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm a little older than you, too, and it's weird. We're in the middle.
Yeah. I had, like, a...
I don't identify with, like, all of the things that you would assume millennials identify with.
Yeah.
No.
So,
Except avocado toast. I heard avocado toast forever.
Avocado toast.
Well, yeah, but also, like, it is great.
I draw the line at spiked seltzer. Sorry.
No way.
I don't do seltzer, period.
Bon and Viv, they got some good ones that are low sugar.
I don't need flavored water. Just give me water.
Stop it. Well, you can.
All right.
Make me insane.
Says Sarah with her Spindrift.
Yeah.
Water right in front of her.
Love it.
Okay. So, but they do actually, like, share a touching moment.
They do.
And it's very lovely.
Yeah.
So we find out that the eyes have come to Rita already. Because Fred and Serena got taken, they came back to her and were like, well, what did you know?
That was one of my first thoughts when Fred and Serena got taken, is like, shit, what happens to her now?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't understand, like, what happens. Does their house go back on Gilead House Hunters?
I mean, hope so.
What is the procedure? I don't understand.
Did they get a new one?
Oh, yeah, that's right. They're not living there. I forgot about that.
Well, we don't know.
Well, we don't know that.
Well, they had to be somewhere.
And now it's kind of irrelevant.
It was offered to them, but yeah.
Well, Rita wasn't in
somehow,
D.C.
Like, that's a good question.
Rita was in Boston. She was in Boston when they left to talk to the
DC
Canadians, right?
Them.
Oh, that was in D.C.?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know when she came back. Maybe she came back when June. But I don't know, because
they discovered they were missing.
That's interesting. No, I guess that's stuff we don't need to know, or that June hasn't found out yet.
We need to talk to Rita again so we can ask these questions.
I know.
Correct. We can do that. We'll try and see if we can do it. So Rita kind of runs down, says that what she told them was that Serena was very nice to her before she left, and June absolutely accurately says she's only nice when she's up to something.
Yep.
And that is
true story.
The truth. So yeah, like Sarah said, they kind of share this moment. They're like touching hands in the carrots.
It's cute.
Yeah, it was awesome. And so Rita lets her know, I'm in on the Martha plan to, she says pretty much like to escort some kids or something, whatever I can do. And so Rita says she's very proud of her, and she's like, "You're such a boss now."
I know. I felt like,
because she asked her if it was her idea.
Like, that was so sweet when she called her a boss.
Right. And that's coming from the boss love last year's, like,
that's,
you know,
yeah,
escape plan.
So proud.
I know, right?
I know.
I wonder if Rita
the pride thing always gets you.
Right.
As soon as she said proud, I was like,
I think Rita's Martha. Well, I guess she's not hardcore Martha Mafia because she's going with June's plan.
She's got a special
maybe
connection.
She is, and that's why she can make that decision on her own.
Thank you.
She can straddle.
That's true.
Because they did say, like, all the Marthas that are doing this with you are on their own. And we're not going to protect them. So I don't know if that means you're out of the Martha Mafia, or if you're just kind of doing your own thing. You don't get that.
Doing like a side job.
I guess we'll find out, won't we? Now, on to Canada. And let's discuss this opening shot, because later on, when the second time that we see Fred sprawled out on the Canadian holding cell couch, yeah, referred to
with
it
the,
as
like Joybird like, furniture, and
it looked like a layout for a photo shoot, uh-huh, for like Private Prisons Monthly. Or
yeah,
some
it was
kind
like the crappiest
movie.
Room at the W Hotel.
Yeah,
I was going to say, it's one of the nicer hotel rooms I've ever probably stayed in.
That's why I say crappiest at the W, because it's really nice.
Right, like, probably nicer, actually. Than
Fred
a
is
lot
looking
of...
very suave. Mm-hmm.
He's in a suit.
He's not hurting at all.
Looking groomed.
Had
showered.
Hoped to maybe see him in pain physically or mentally or both.
Later a little bit.
Or any type of depravity.
Yeah,
I mean,
true. Still.
He even had stuff
lovely
to read.
Natural
didn't he?
Light
didn't he have a
in
newspaper?
That room.
I don't know if he had a newspaper.
The whole back is a wall that overlooks like a forest or something.
It's like a little courtyard.
Yeah, I know. Fine.
It was,
whatever.
It was too nice. Too
whatever
good for him.
The fact that
nice.
He can see
too
real air and like.
What do we want? We want Fred like a
soft
a black
lighting.
Side prison. Like
I'm
like,
not saying, but I'm just saying. Are all
can
the
we
other
at
prisoners?
Least put him in Orange Is the New Black prison.
Just
come on,
garden variety.
What I'm saying is, are all the other prisoners in rooms like that, the ones who did other crimes? I mean, are his crimes fancier and nicer than
I think they are?
Oh, apparently they are. But I like all my questions here. I'm like, why is he in a suit? Why is he not in handcuffs? Why is he in the nicest room I've seen? How are they able to have a private moment, he and Serena? That I mean, why is all
so
in
many,
any of
so
this
many
happening?
Things.
Yeah, the very again. Keeping with their, I will say, of all things, this is consistent with the lax Canadian security. Because we have seen throughout the times that we've been to Canada, whether it was, you know, Luke being all up in Fred's face, having access to the Prime Minister's car.
Yeah,
There's not too much lay in between you and whatever you're trying to get to in Canada. They just kind of let you do your thing and then
well,
clean
I
it
mean,
up afterwards.
Most other countries don't do the level of like fencing off and, you
right.
know, physically removing crowds from places where public figures are that we do.
Right.
Because we're weird and paranoid.
What?
And people are crazy.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But when, what's her name?
Emily,
when she shut the door, or no, it was Moira. Somebody shut the door of the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
My husband was like,
great.
Oh,
that
no.
That was a great moment.
No. And I was like,
I wrote here, Fred is in a glass box of emotion. And he's doing a little brooding, because that's what he does. It looked like it was either going
to
be like
wouldn't you like to think it was at least like self-reflection time, but
oh,
I'm sure
okay.
it's not.
Fred is not self-reflecting.
Yeah.
So Serena comes in, and she has clearly gotten a visit with Fred, which I thought was amusing, as Sarah did. I was like,
they're having a
no
private
one?
Moment
yeah.
in a hotel room.
Right.
That's what it looks like.
Also, if I were Serena, I don't think I would want that to be a private meeting.
Thank you.
Well, I don't think Serena knows Fred doesn't have it in him with her.
I don't know.
Risk
I'd
feel
be
like
to
that's
take.
The kind of news that you just don't deliver without somebody nearby. Like, that's the kind of
disagree.
News that if you weren't in prison, you would get, deliver that news in a public place.
Yes, I don't disagree at all. So the official exchange here is essentially what's happening is Serena's trying to get Fred to not give them anything beyond what she's already given them.
Yeah, to not incriminate himself further.
All right.
And so this exchange is as follows. You have to stop worrying about me now because Fred's, like, you know, still doing the...
I care,
yeah.
Baby,
okay. I won't give
me
anything.
And you against the world.
And I won't give them anything on you or do anything to you. And she's like, yeah, so about that.
I'll be fine.
You don't have to stop worrying. You have to stop worrying about me now. You have to save yourself. And that's the point when I started laughing for the first of many times in this scene. And she says, I'll be fine. And then Fred was like...
It still takes him a moment.
It does.
I mean, the wheels are turning ever so slowly.
Yep. She says you have to worry about saving yourself. Now.
Yeah.
I'll be fine. And then Fred's like, wait.
What?
He's like, goes all Ghostbusters. What did you do, Serena? What did you do? And we all knew what Serena did. Except for there were some people last week, again, like I said, that were like,
that's
there was
true.
No evidence that Serena set
some
Fred.
Some people
oh,
really
but
were...
I hope all those people are happy now. Because clearly...
Yeah, they really wanted to believe.
Yeah, if you needed confirmation, this was it.
That Serena's a horrible person.
So then...
Even when doing the actual right thing.
Right.
So then we get our thin line between love and hate moment where it's like, oh, I love you. I love you. I'm not going to give anything. Oh, wait, you sold me out. You suck. I'm going to strangle you. So.
See?
Yeah, Fred goes completely the opposite direction.
It's the most angry he's probably ever been at her.
Remember that fight they had in that house where she was like, you're stupid.
That was pretty bad.
Whoa. Yeah. That was a bad one.
Still one of my favorite scenes to watch.
It was a great fight. It was a great fight.
So she says she just wants to be with her daughter and that her daughter needs her. And Fred was like, it's always been about your needs. And then he goes, full Mr. T, I pity the child that has you as your mother. And I was like, well, damn. All right. Well, I guess the time for playing around is pretty much over.
Sure.
Because Serena is still like, even though she's turned him over, she's still very much in this.
She still loves him. Yeah. Some wacko reason that I don't understand.
Sure.
And Fred just like
is
light
a puppy.
Switch, right? Yeah. It's one or the other. Very typical. That I will say as a dude. Serena removes his tendril from her neck, and she leaves, because he is.
She says, "I'll pray for you, Fred."
Yeah.
That Fred, is like the I feel like I should start using that instead of expletives. Like, just tell people calmly that I'm going to pray for them, and then walk away.
That's scarier, I think, if you say that.
It's definitely more frustrating than any other thing I could possibly say.
That's very true.
Yeah, it's very.
On the rare occasion that has been aimed at me, I just want to, like, strangle that person immediately.
Well, that's what Fred was trying to do.
I know, right? I would have been more successful than Fred.
This is a very satisfying scene, I must say, just because it reinforces how stupid Fred is.
Oh, God, yeah.
And ridiculous.
Still, I'm sure he thinks he's... got some things under his control.
Well, you know, he used it to whatever extent it was required to use later on Luke, but I felt Luke was
that
like...
That was... Later with Luke, that was, like, the most successfully manipulative Fred has ever been.
Well, I feel like it's two dudes that are fairly easily manipulated.
I mean, they're relatively simple dudes.
Manipulating each other, right?
So, yeah.
They... Yeah. So, next, it's time for the Mrs. Lawrence show. We find Mrs. Lawrence in our next scene, leaning up against the wall. At least that's where June finds her. And we're like, what's happening? So June grabs her, and she's like, Joseph would want me to go back in. And we're like, where are we even going? What is even happening right now? So we go in, and ba-ba-ba, Lady Putnam and Winslow, wife.
Mrs. Winslow.
Mrs. Winslow are there. And we walk in kind of as Lady Putnam is praying for Mr. Winslow's safety. We have a double, so it's a double Putnam sighting, which I was excited about for this episode.
In one episode, yeah.
And she says that they're frightened for her children, and Eleanor scoffs at her and says, "Ah, your children." And that's the first sign that this is probably not going to go well.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That was great and scary.
So an interesting thing here, though, is that Eleanor mentions that she's afraid that they're going to come take the children away, which is another thing we kind of haven't encountered, right? Which is what happens if the commander dies, and clearly they don't respect the women anyway.
And they have no problem.
Clearly something happens to them because she's afraid they're going to come take them away.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that a society like this doesn't trust women to do things on their own, like raise children.
Right, so...
she's got some boys, too.
And I think we've talked about this before. What happens to the widowed?
I would imagine they get married off or something.
Yeah. Paired off,
I don't know.
Did they get a choice? I would imagine not. I just said that out loud and I laughed.
But if they got paired off again, then why wouldn't they just pair her off with someone else and then continue to raise the same
Does happen. I don't know.
But they clearly have no problem removing their mothers.
But they may think along the lines of, like, well, why would some man want to raise other men's children? Like, there's no problem with the dude. Let's give these children to the... I don't know, whatever place they send kids to when people don't watch. I don't know.
We don't know.
I don't know. June I totally lost the thread as it was coming out of my mouth. I have no idea.
We don't know yet because June doesn't know yet.
No.
We only know what she knows. It's still messing with
me. I know. I was going to say, you're still perseverating on it.
The character I love to hate.
Hold on, time out. Was that word you just...
Perseverating, like you're...
Whoa.
Twisting it around.
The word of the day is... Perseverating.
I feel like Justin's a specialist in this word of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True story.
You think your thoughts a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, are you arguing with me?
That comes with one of my acronyms.
It's like ruminating to the extreme.
The OCD does it. So then June goes like full Godfather. on Miss Putnam and Mrs. Winslow, where she's like, they're talking, because Mrs. Winslow asks her to pray for, or Miss Putnam, I think, is the one who says you'll pray for Mr. Winslow's safety, and she says, may God watch over Commander Winslow
wherever he is.
I was like, oh, okay.
Damn. Yeah.
So it's like that.
Yeah. I did realize in the scene, like, I kind of miss Lady Putnam.
She's awesome.
She's got great faces. Like, her face is just, like, saying all of the things that her character is not saying so directly.
Yes. Yeah, because she, of all the wives,
Ever Carradine,
is, like,
right?
One of the...
Ever Carradine, yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's, like, the one with, like, barely the filter that they put on.
Uh-huh. Barely, yes.
You know, it's like all the
Well,
all the
like how everybody could tell she hated babies, like, at first. Like, yeah. It was just clear.
Oh, yeah. Remember when she first got the baby and we were all like, she hates that baby.
Somebody take that baby away.
Get
from her
away from the baby that she hates.
Baby hater. So, at this point, we get into Eleanor's kind of collapse, the beginning of it, right? And so,
yeah,
Eleanor's like, as soon as she is, Mrs. Winslow talks about the children being taken away, Eleanor's like, hey, I got an idea.
We got a thing.
What, you know me.
We're saving kids. You want to save some kids? We could save your kids. And Jude and Larry are like,
they'll fit, right?
What? Well, actually just happened. And so they do kind of play it off pretty well. She's actually talking about
surprisingly convincing.
The house.
Yeah, I thought so. Still,
man.
Whoa.
Yeah. So Lawrence plays it off like they're talking about them coming to the house and joining the family.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you're Winslows and you know all the things that you know about the Lawrence house already, like they're, you know, the book.
How much do you think Commander Winslow shares with his wife?
Yeah, that's good.
I don't get the impression that he has the most respect for her. Shares all his thoughts.
Maybe. Clearly doesn't share a lot.
I don't know about that.
So, June is getting a little scared, and you can tell. She's, like, getting that look like...
Rightfully so.
We need to figure out...
Gotta rein this in.
...to get this lady to not speak anymore. How about that? So Lady Putnam says the eyes have questioned them, and then June and Lawrence are a little concerned about Eleanor, just in general, because she's...
Yeah, so, I mean, you gotta imagine immediately the eyes coming and questioning her, right?
I mean, at that point, that's when you're kind of like, oh. And what I didn't know, I guess, was that she didn't know about the plan before, because later on, June was like, you're the one that told her you fucked up about the plan in general, because now she could just blab that out of her mouth whenever she, you know, whenever the thought hits her mind.
Yeah.
Not being stable is probably not a good thing.
And you can only pass it off as she's unstable.
Right.
So many times before people are going to be like, what's happening?
Well, this is consistent.
Right.
Well, also, her being unstable is a pretty well-known fact because she ran into Putnam that day
when
they were on the walk. When she
saw
her about, I'm so glad that your baby lived and didn't die. And we were like,
Oh,
so weird.
Right?
Say die more, please.
Yeah, please. Please say it's more. So next scene, back up to Canada, Moira time. So Moira is going through security, not a fan of the Canadian prison, I guess, holding facility.
Hotel spa weekend?
I gotta hope it's not the prison.
It's some kind of facility. I don't know. Whatever it is, it's posh. So they're going through, Moira's, you know, talking shit like she does, being Moira, about the security procedures.
And Luke laying is it like down for business. Real. She's not talking shit.
Luke
that was all legit.
Yeah. No, I agree. She was like, because she, also she did like, crossed the line there with, like, what did she, I don't remember what she threatened, like, wasn't a bomb, a baby, she had the baby of the bomb or something like that. It was some kind of joking about,
oh, like, the like there's
assassin,
gonna be a
baby assassin,
yeah,
or something like that. And Luke was like, fuck around.
Yeah, it was like going through TSA and saying bomb, like,
right.
Apparently you don't do that shit even in Canada.
No.
Well,
I don't think you really should do that anyway.
Pretty reasonable, yeah. I'm a fan of that rule.
So Luke just wants to get in there and see Fred in a cage, just as he
mentioned. Yeah.
No.
I don't know, like, what he was expecting, but, like, it's not like he was gonna get in there and, you know, with the baby.
I don't.
And, like, see Fred being tortured or something. Like, I also would have been really disappointed with seeing that he was being treated that well.
Yeah, I think.
But, like, for some reason, I just got the impression that Luke was expecting things to be real bad.
Right.
Like, he had not been living in that version of Canada for some time now.
Right.
And
yeah.
Well, it's much nicer than where Luke lives.
Right.
Yeah, it is.
The refugee center is not quite as posh as the
Little America is not.
No. So, the next scene we get here within this scene is Serena, and she's getting dressed. And in my opinion, she's decided to never, ever put her hair up ever, ever, ever again.
Right.
At least that's the way she looked at it in the mirror.
I mean, it was
like, oh, I don't have to do that.
It was her little she's all that. She let her hair she's down. If she had glasses, she would have taken them off.
She's got paint-covered overalls. I'm, like, obsessed with Not Another Teen.
Clearly.
It's such a good movie.
Freddie Prinze Jr. a commander?
He would do it. He could do it.
But he's so, like,
could do it.
Silly. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
It would just really not work. Thing.
I don't know really? Why, back in the day.
I don't even remember that many movies he was in.
Oh, he was in a bunch in that
era. The Skulls era.
High school, early college movies.
Yeah, I guess I was just not seeing a lot of movies then.
Clearly not.
I remember She's All That.
Captain Fruity Pants comes in to check on Serena, and she asked how Fred took it, and she was like, well, you could take it. That's how you imagined he would take it. And he tries to pull that he's not your concern anymore card. Like, Serena's just going to be like, oh, really? Thank you, good. I'm glad I don't have to worry
bye
about
bye
that
now.
Anymore. And she still plays the husband card, because when you first walk in, she's kind of eyeing her ring on the chair. And he tells her to look to the future. And so they're, like, having this thing, right?
Yeah, it was a little uncomfortable.
It was a little bit.
Captain Freedom Pants clearly had the thing for Serena, I think. And, you know, I kind of thought Serena had a thing for him, but, like,
I can't tell if he really does or if he just is playing it that way.
I don't think so.
No?
I don't think so.
Hmm.
I don't think it's really to his benefit to play it that way.
Interesting.
I think Serena is too smart for that.
I don't know.
Maybe he's just thinking that from the society that they're in, like,
oh, yeah.
A man talking
that,
to her,
like, attention would be good.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe.
So, social worker comes in, and Serena greets her, and the interesting thing here is she starts to greet her with, like, a normal Gilead response to her hello, or, like, I forget what she even started to say, but she stops herself. Because she was about to say, like,
yeah,
you know,
she said,
blessed day,
yeah,
or
something like that.
Open the fruit, or whatever.
She catches herself, and then just says hello right back to her, which is funny, because it's one of those things, like, you've done it for 5 years.
Yeah, I think she's a blessed day, or something.
Yeah. So then Moira walks in with the baby, and I said, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was real glad it was Moira bringing in the baby.
Man.
I was ready for that conversation.
And so, this whole scene is fucking gold. It took me forever to take the notes because I had to pause because I was, like, clapping audibly.
Yes, it was great.
My child was in the other room, like, what is happening? I was like, this scene is amazing. So, we open this whole thing. Serena says, it's nice to meet you. Come on! Like,
really?
Like, this is one of those moments where Serena has, like, this extreme lack of... Well, it's either one of two.
It's extreme, like, polite habits.
It's either the polite habits where she feels like that's going to be reciprocated still, or she just lacks self-awareness. And I think
those are the same thing in this case.
So?
I totally think those are the same thing. When privileged people are not pushed back against all the time, they're, like, shocked when it doesn't work out well when they do their normal stuff.
Right.
Well, and her being in a position of authority all these years, you know, she's probably not expecting the response she gets, which is, I'm June's friend. And Serena makes that Serena face where she's, like, upset and doesn't know what to
play. I for real expected her to say at that point, like, your husband raped me.
Oh, she did.
I know,
yeah,
later.
I was gonna say, she,
but
she
I,
did,
I expected it right then.
Oh, yeah.
Like, as a greeting.
As an opener, yeah.
Yeah, because I don't think that Moira went in with the intent of fully, like, going at her. I think she was like, I'm gonna
say some things, but not all the things.
But then as it went along,
yeah.
I think
and she
was,
said all
yeah,
the
she
things.
Did,
yeah, she
did
all the
start
things.
To lose it a little.
So... Moira not exactly in a hurry to, like, let this visit happen, because she's, like, stalling and, like,
I thought it was interesting
worker,
that the social
hey,
worker let her go.
Yeah, right? And so she's kind of, like, hanging around, and she just keeps saying things.
Uh-huh.
She's
right.
around, and you're just
she's
like,
here's a binky, by the way, you tortured women.
Right, and then Serena's like, I'm sure she'll be fine with me. And Moira's
okay.
I think that was really what kicked it, right?
Sure.
Like, right. Well, the way she said it was just so condescending. Like,
of
course I know how to take care of her.
Well, from Serena's vantage point, she's, like, been so eager. This is, like, everything. Right?
I
this
get
is, like,
that, but that was also completely stupid of her.
Oh, it is.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah.
I'm just... like putting myself
completely
in her head where you're
stupid.
Like 5 feet away from the kid.
It's not like she didn't have time to think about how this was gonna go.
I think Serena
what's she
thought,
gonna do in her beautiful room?
She's got baby brain.
I think that Serena thought, and I don't mean to defend Serena, I never want to be the person
that's,
that does that
fair.
But like she did take care of her earlier, so I think she thought, I know how because I did it, even though she didn't do it alone, right. And she had a lot
or
of help.
Or very well.
And she was the she did give up the baby, and so I think she gives herself a lot of credit for that. Again, still a tone deaf thing to say,
right.
And pretty ridiculous. And it did come out very condescending, and very sort of dismissive, as condescension often is. I'm very much like, off, peasant, right. Give me my baby. You know, like, it was just...
To me, it came off more as just outright impatience. Not necessarily angry at Moira for...
I didn't think she was angry at Moira.
I thought she was just, like, 3 feet away from me is the only reason that I even did all this shit.
Right.
Give it to me now, right now. I thought it was more like a Baruch Salt moment than it was like a, you know, I want an Oompa Loompa now.
I want
my Nicole now moment. I thought it was more that than it was like, fuck you, give me my kid, I know what to do. And so Moira goes on this nice little monologue. Who are you? Just because you got some new clothes doesn't make you any different. You're still the same woman that held my friend down so your husband could rape her. Patow!
Yeah.
Shots fired.
Oh, she had to say it. When I heard her say it, I was like, you had to say it. You had to. You couldn't.
You could not. You don't know if you could get another chance.
I was going to say, you couldn't let that moment pass.
Serena needs to be reminded of that now. She is in a nicer place, being treated well, being treated respectfully, even given the heinous crime she has committed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And
she still has dignity.
She needs to be reminded. You still fucked up a lot.
Yep.
You still did bad shit.
Yeah. And so at this point, Kat and Traz to intervene.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Not happening, yeah. Sorry, Joel from Parenthood.
I forget what he even says to Moira. He says that's unnecessary.
He says that's uncalled something like that. She's like, oh, no.
She says, like, it's uncalled for or something. Yeah.
So she just fuck yous to him. And then you're like, yeah.
Yeah, like, right?
So, and then she just, like, now it's just all coming, right? Now it's, the faucet is just turned on full blast. And so she tells Serena, you raped me, too, at the whorehouse. And she gives this whole thing, I am who I am, and I sin plenty, but you are the gender traitor, and then walks out the door. Well, is
this cool? It was great.
But it was a great way to end that scene.
And but like I said.
I feel like this is one of those scenes where people are just going to be, like, screaming.
Like,
at
stand up.
Yes! Yes! You tell her. That's what I was doing. It was fantastic.
Well, that was her window. You got to say it. Like, when she said it, I kind of expected it. Like, what else is Moira going to say in this moment?
Right?
She's going to fire off, because this is her window.
Yep.
You do it. You defend your friend, you defend yourself, or represent your friend and yourself.
You don't know when you're going to get another chance, right? We don't know what's going to happen in the future. We don't know how many visitations Serena has allegedly been promised. That's my other thing, is I
want to
know
really
how much
know.
Things that she thinks she's going to get is she actually going to get.
Exactly where my head went during all of this.
And does she even know? Because she seemed surprised when the social worker told her not to call
herself her mom.
Her mother.
Yeah.
So have they led Serena on? What have they told Serena that she'll be able
Maybe
to have?
Maybe Serena's just assumed a lot.
I don't know. The whole situation was very uncomfortable for me. I was like, what have they told Serena about how much time she's going to get with the baby? What
details.
Is going to be the baby's with the relationship with the baby?
What does this contract look like?
Even in my head, I was like, how long is this visit? How long does she get to visit with the baby?
And it's then clearly going to have
hour.
To be supervised.
It was an hour.
It's 1 hour and supervised.
Yeah. Yes.
Right, and supervised. And not just supervised, but like Hawkeye supervised.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like she sits over in the corner on her phone. Like, she's like, no, you can't say that.
Yeah.
No, don't do, you know. I mean, it was very interactive, that supervision, whereas some can be, you know, more lax. But, like, I mean, the whole thing, I'm like, what are Luke and Moira?
I don't know how long they could let it go on, because, like, what about
what have Luke and Moira been
growing and, like, has questions about who this lady is?
Right?
As far as, like, Captain says that they're going to basically keep her until they're done with the process with Fred.
These situations.
Whatever that means.
Right.
I don't know how long it takes for someone to be tried for war crimes in an international court. So we'll see how long it takes. And whether that's as long as she's going to get the visits is as long as that whole process takes before, you know.
Because they do still
Sarah
need
kind of
her at
thing,
this point.
They just promise her a bunch of shit to get her to do what they
Maybe.
Want her to do.
They need her for this trial.
Sure. But then what have they told Luke and Moira? What do Luke and Moira know about what's happening with Nicole? And
they have her up there, and they're already doing the visitations. My guess is she's already told them stuff, signed off on it, and they have all they need for Fred. Because she even told Fred, essentially, that you don't need to tell them anything else. Basically saying, I've given them everything they need to, like, put you away forever.
I don't know.
Do
I mean, that's
killed.
Still not as good of a case as having her testifying.
I'm not disagreeing, but I don't know that they would really take that chance on her.
I think also, when it's an international... when it is an international war crimes trial, the point is to have them on the world stage being tried.
Right.
And at that point, like, for this kind of thing. Like, you really need, like, it's practically a victim statement almost from her. Because she, you know, as horrible as she was and as many terrible things as she did, was also a victim of that situation. As all the wives really are.
For sure. She lost a finger.
Yeah.
Her poor finger.
Look what I lost.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I still really want to see Serena punished, but, you know,
put her
still
in a glass box, gilded cage. Like Nuremberg.
Still
like,
a cage.
There you go.
Be cool.
Be cool.
Be cool.
I'm getting all excited. I'm like, ooh.
Yay, trials.
Yeah, just put them in a bulletproof box.
Let's not make it bulletproof.
Or not.
For funsies.
Yeah, or just walk around the neighborhood.
Just for funsies. Let's you know, not lock the door.
Right.
Sure, it's bulletproof.
Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Next scene, Serena and Nicole. Right, so Nicole is like, who the hell is this lady?
Right.
And why is she holding me? And I said, clearly the Force is strong with this one because she senses a Sith Lord among
them. Yeah, I thought that was really good. I wondered how many times they had to shoot it for the baby to be fussy at, like, just the right time.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I mean, maybe they've just done a really good job of, like, prepping, like, she hasn't been around the baby that's playing the baby for a long time.
Whoever the casting person is nailed it pretty much with everything so far, you know, so I gotta think they got babies on lock.
Well, and interestingly, Yvonne Strahovski is a new mom, so she's probably, like, at the peak of her baby-holding ability. I mean, yeah, like...
peak of her baby-holding ability.
You know, like, it hones in when you have babies.
I love it.
So you're saying that regardless of, you know, whether you've held a baby or not, the moment that you have a baby, it kicks in, and all of a sudden you know how to hold a baby?
Not perfectly, no, but you're better than you were. Pre-baby me was much more awkward holding a baby than post-baby me, let me put it that way.
Like, before the baby, you were, like, one of those, like, held it out away from you.
Like, well, no, but I was very tense. I would, like, pull
it,
a neck
like
muscle.
Like, a football that's really hot.
I did. I held my nephew, who was 2 days old, and I had never held a baby that young, and I was, like, 27. I wasn't, like, 12 or anything. And I was like, ugh, and then, like, my neck hurt. I was like, why would somebody give me a baby this young? I can't. But then, of course, when it was my babies.
Why does my family trust me?
But then, like, 3 years later, I had two babies in my arms at the same time. And I was fine. It wasn't perfect, but it was, again, better than 27-year-old me holding my nephew.
This is the point at which Serena trying to calm the baby refers to herself as mama. And the social worker says, no. Can't do that.
Not allowed. Rules.
Serena's clearly not thrilled, A, with being told what to do by anyone in general, and B, with not being able to...
Well, you would think she's used to it by now, but still. You know. It stings, clearly.
Yes.
Oh.
So the next scene, we walk in on Lawrence yelling on the phone, going all burrow down with somebody on the other end.
Yeah, trying to prevent war.
Trying to prevent everybody from freaking out and overreacting. I assume he's on the phone with someone on the Council of War.
The Council of War.
Yeah.
The skulls.
Because it's caveman time. trying to get people not to freak out, June sneaks up on him, and Lawrence wants June to move up the plane date. This is when that happens. And meanwhile, Eleanor is trying to go leave to recruit some kids.
Eleanor?
Oh, I'm going down the street to see if we can get this kid. He wants to go. We can save him, too.
What if they had not seen her? What if she made it out there?
Ugh.
What would happen?
I figured, like, that's
Eleanor.
She's one of those people that you need to have, like, a life alert thing on, or, like, a perimeter, like, alarm system of Eleanor is out of the building.
Yeah, just, like, for small children.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or you could get her, like, one of those teddy bear backpack things with the string where you just pull her back if she goes too far.
Oh, with the leash?
Yeah.
The backpack leashes? Yeah.
Those things are awful.
They are awful, but man, when my kid was small, I was like, you know, I kind of get it now.
Right?
Exactly. I kind of get it. My kid is a wanderer.
Mm-hmm.
I never purchased one, but I thought
didn't
about
have
it.
One either, but I suddenly understood why
there's
people have them.
There's a lot of things when you're a young parent that you don't understand until you're, like, in that moment. You're like,
until you get to that point, your kid gets to that point, you're like, ah, that actually is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
I am sorry all the parents I judged before.
Right?
For sure.
You were right on.
Yeah, there's a lot of apologies to be issued once you're a new parent.
That's very true.
So, Lawrence tries to... I keep calling him Larry, but he's Joseph. He keeps trying to calm her down. It's not working. So June decides
shakes to get a little rough... shit out of her.
A little rough with her. And kind of slams her against the, like, the doorway.
Yeah,
and is
surprisingly
like,
rough.
Can you stop talking, please? Just stop. You can't go tell anybody, you can't do all the things you want to do, because it's not how we're going to get this accomplished. And so Lawrence tells her she just needs to think about their life. When they're out of this place, we can leave all of this behind.
Which was the wrong thing to say, I felt. I felt like, again, she's not stupid. Nope. She's just unstable. There's a difference. So don't talk to her like a child.
She's unstable.
Right. Like, because, I mean, he's like, just think about it out of here. It's like, no. Tell her why. Say, if you talk to these people, we can't do what we need to do. No one gets saved. Like, explain to her. She's a logical person. She's just emotionally unstable. Like, right. Not
a
dummy.
That's how June handles her. And
but
she
June
responds
doesn't.
To that.
I don't think all the time. No,
not
no.
At all. I'm saying
yeah.
this instance,
I think.
She
yeah.
Just
at this,
her
in
and
this
says,
moment,
you can't
that
save
is.
You.
Yeah.
Just,
but she doesn't say because.
Yeah. Well, I think in that moment, that's kind of the panic time. So I don't think they're really concerned with because.
Breaking
I think
it down.
With, hey,
here's a flow chart.
Stop it.
Of why you can't do this.
And so
here's
we get
what
our,
would happen.
Our all too ominous Eleanor line, which is, can we really do that? Referring to, can we really leave it all behind, regardless of whether we actually get, if we get out, can we even leave it behind mentally, right?
Because
I
again,
think that's what she's thinking.
Oh, well, she knows he'll
that's
be.
That's how I took it anyway.
Tried for war crimes and all. I mean, it'd be terrible if they left.
Well, to me, that
well,
was,
she won't.
To me, that was more her referring to mentally leaving it behind. Like, we can get out, even if we get out and we're not charged for war crimes by some, you know, if 52 kids is the right number, and they somehow get off easily. I think she was referring to the fact that mentally, we can't ever leave any of this behind. Because
sure. I took it as, like, she meant it in a more literal way, but you are meant as the viewer to take it in the deeper way.
I thought
psychologically, you're scarred forever.
I thought the psychological way was the right way, considering what happens to her in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, with hindsight.
It's true. Because I even wrote, not liking the look of Eleanor in general, because this is, like, she, like, goes up the steps, like, all the very sullen.
Yes.
And, like, June and Lawrence are both kind of looking at it like, did we do the right
yike.
Thing?
Yike. Yeah.
There, did we handle that right?
It does. I mean, they do look like, oh, did we just crush the puppy?
Right.
Like,
very
they,
true.
You know, I realize in that moment.
Yeah.
She's so fragile.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if they, I mean, they both knew how fragile she was, but.
Yeah, definitely.
More
than others.
More clear
yeah.
As it goes along. Because they keep putting her in these positions that she normally wouldn't have been in. Like, Lawrence had her pretty much
contained
with, you know, I mean, she didn't leave her room, which is probably
sad.
Now looking like he had an okay plan, but, you know, it's not the best. So next scene, and this is where I wrote the note. This looks like a layout for a photo shoot for, like, Private Prisons magazine or something, where Fred's, like, sprawled out on the couch.
It really does. It was, like, the Mad Men prison.
All right. I was just like, can we scuzz him up a little bit? Like, put him in a jumpsuit? Do something? Give me anything.
At least give him, like, off-brand clothes.
Have his beard be uncombed or something?
He looks very suave. I mean...
It's ridiculous.
He's
I'm sure also
guy.
He knows who's coming, right? So, like...
I don't know.
If you're Fred, like, isn't that the time you're going to try to look as relaxed and comfortable and with it as possible?
I don't know. It was just funny, man, because I was just like, oh, you know, he's a normally attractive dude anyway, but now he's wearing, like, this fancy suit. Because normally he's wearing, like, plain commander suit, which isn't all that, like, flattering.
Right.
But now he's got, like, this real, like, high-end fancy, and now he's got that...
Well, this is what he was driving in, right?
Right. And now he's got that, like, I just rolled out of bed, oops, I'm sexy look thing going on. Oh, this old thing, I just slept in this
That's
night.
Hilarious.
Oh, it's beautiful. That's what I told you. So Captain comes in and talks to Fred, and Fred goes and says, you know, you guys poisoned Serena. And Captain says, time out, Fred. We both know that Serena's too smart to be manipulated. I think what he's saying is, unlike you, because you're stupid. And Fred says, manipulation won't work on him either, although I think he's being manipulated whilst he's saying, you can't manipulate me. That's my theory here. But then the captain kind of pulls the cord on it real quick. And he's like, okay, cool, fair enough. And he says, Luke has asked for a meeting. And Fred's like, sure, bring him in, which I don't know why Fred gets a vote. Why does Fred get a vote if he wants to see
Because he's in the fanciest hotel ever.
Canada
and he gets
too nice for its own good.
Yeah.
Canadian folk, please let us know if your prisons are also this nice. Like, do you get a say on whether, like, you get to talk to people or not?
If they are. If I ever feel like committing a heinous crime, you know where I'm going
to
do it.
Straight up to Canada.
Canada.
So... Luke comes in, and, like, this is, like, the opposite of, not the opposite, but it. I think this was designed to show you the different ways that sometimes dudes handle their feelings than women handle their feelings. Because
really, the whole show does that.
It's very true, very true. But this one in particular, where, I don't know what Luke's plan was.
That's what my question to you.
With this whole binder of stuff.
Didn't understand what Luke was trying to do.
Yeah, I was really confused about the binder.
because clearly it had some things. Because he, I think he opens up with, "I know what you did."
It looked like it could have been his wedding photo album or something. Like, I mean, who?
You know, he saved that when they were trying.
I remember. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been angrier at anything in this show. That's saying
as
a lot.
When he's as like, when "But the wedding album."
They're trying to escape the authoritarian regime, and Luke is like, "But I got to take that." And I'm like, "Motherfucker, you better get in the truck now."
This is the time to let your sentimentality go.
You don't get it.
You handle it. Get in the car, Luke. So he comes in there, and then they're talking. This is literally my notes. Luke is none too pleased with the commander's plush accommodations because he does make note of that when he's in there. He's like looking around, going, "Seriously,
what is happening here?"
This is my notes for the rest of the scene. Luke talks to Fred. Fred talks back. Luke punches Fred in the face because that was the essential. Like, that's what happened. I don't know what Luke was there to do or say because he didn't say it.
I was gonna say what if there was a winner and a loser? Fred won and Luke lost.
Somehow
and
that happened.
I was not satisfied.
No.
With that interaction at
it's
all.
Not what I wanted to see.
I couldn't tell why Luke was there in the first place, but he got completely distracted because Fred said all of one thing that Luke probably had to already have known, which was that June isn't the woman that he married five years ago and Gilly's changed her. Well, no shit, yeah. Luke.
It was the eye of change her that really set him off.
I know, but that was clearly a stab at him, and he totally fell for it. I was like, Luke, get your shit together.
Really,
how did you think this interaction was going
to
go?
That maybe Luke had been like working out his dad bod and like was coming in to really, really give it to him.
No,
and nobody. Yes, the prosthetic dad bod. I was very happy to see that it was a prosthetic dad bod.
No, but like I didn't even want him to lay hands on him. I wanted him to win the conversation and make Fred feel like shit and do something. Yes, and Luke like completely whiffed.
Yeah,
hard.
I don't think I like Luke's character a lot, and I think he's a really normal dude.
True,
I don't think he is gonna win the wit.
I know, but Fred's a dummy. I don't know.
Yeah,
I expected him to come out at least slightly on top.
Luke is not a mean enough person to win the wit game. There,
I mean, if he was,
you need Serena for that.
He wasn't even mean spirited enough to not let her see the kid that isn't hers at the airport.
Yeah,
like to the extent that he like gave her this olive branch for no reason,
right?
Whatsoever. Unless he was like instructed to do so by Captain Freedompants before they got there.
I doubt it. It didn't seem that way.
All I know is if I'm Luke, you got to mentally prepare yourself for all the crazy shit that Fred's probably going to throw at you if you're going to go in there.
Of course, I guess we're saying that knowing his character very well, and Luke doesn't.
I guess,
that's
but
true.
If I was walking into that room, I would expect for them to throw something like that at me and not freak out.
Maybe the niceness of the accommodations like really threw him off, and he was like, "I don't know what's going
on
anymore."
I can see how it would.
Right. So next scene,
Eleanor.
This is the big one. Eleanor. Oh. So June brings
this
up the tea,
hard.
Like she does. And usually the standard protocol prior to June arriving was that you just leave the tea outside because she doesn't answer the door and no one usually deals with her. But June has had this relationship. So June this time opens the door and goes in. And you can tell by the noises that Eleanor is making that something is amiss. And so we learned that basically she's taking a bottle of pills to essentially kill herself. And so June, this whole scene was very like... It was rough, right?
Yeah. I mean, it would have been a really difficult scene even if she had immediately gone for help.
Right.
It would have been really difficult.
It was...
But then she doesn't.
She does. And she...
At least her character had the sense to look kind of ashamed about it.
Oh, I think she feels shame. I think she feels terrible. But my thought post this episode about this scene was if this was me... Regardless of this relationship that I have built with this person who seems to be on the up and up, still you were party to this whole thing, did nothing to stop it.
And knowing that she could have done something to stop it, she was not gone.
No, she was not so far gone. So to me, that makes it a little easier given what June is trying to do.
And she's a clear liability, but...
It's still awful.
It was brutal. It was more brutal than I thought June was going to be. I may have underestimated her.
I was really shocked she didn't tell anybody.
Like, when she puts the tray back outside the door, I'm like, oh, wow.
Yeah, I was not sure where that was going, whether it was going to be she was going to call for help just too late, like she had gotten there too late and she was already dead. Oh, but no, she went full on, I didn't even go in the room, and let them find her in the morning.
And so, yeah, at first I thought Commander Lawrence was going to find her, and I was like, that is, whoa, yeah. How could you do that? I was relieved that it was a Martha, not that it's great for the Martha, but
right.
Not the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she just goes back in her room and lays there until we hear the Martha scream, because she finds her. And then we know she's dead. And everybody is like, oh. Because that's another level. Like, that's, I don't know, two murders in 72 hours.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Well, yeah,
it's a manslaughter.
For this character, right? Well, manslaughter, technically. Forget technical. But, I mean, that is an interesting take for this character, for the audience and the viewer, because that is a different level of thing, especially given the relationship and how we've been made to feel, not made, sorry Bruce, Bruce is not manipulating us
we've
to
been
feel
led.
Anything for anyone.
We've been led down a path that makes us feel compassionate for her.
So, you know, it always brings up that old question, does the ends justify the means? Like, if you're doing a good thing overall, can you do bad things to get there? I mean, it's...
Well, yeah, and it's for a thing that we don't know how it's going to turn out.
Right, there's no guarantee.
It might be for nothing.
But nobody ever gets guarantees in these types of situations, you know? And
yeah, so it'll be interesting to see.
Yikes.
Is. So.
I felt very betrayed by June at this part of the episode.
Not
really?
Only...
You felt betrayed?
Yes, I really did. I was like, wow, that's...
Interesting.
Farther than I expected her
to go. Is that farther than
go.
You would have gone in that same situation?
I think so. I don't think I would be able to pretend I hadn't gone in.
And it extra stung when they had that interaction later, not to jump ahead, but she comforts him, and I'm like, how can you sit there and comfort him?
Yeah.
Like, what are you, why, how are you saying the words that you're saying? Like, if I had done something that heinous and had decided that I wasn't going to tell anybody, I would probably just make myself very scarce. I don't think I could look in the eyes of the spouse and go, oh, you know, like that little interaction they had. Like, it's, there's a lot going on there.
What speaks even more to, like, where she's at is, like, your, if 99% of people, your gut reaction when you see somebody in the situation that she finds Eleanor in, your gut reaction is not to do what she did, right?
Right, right.
It's not to take a beat.
Ignore it.
Think about it.
And, right.
Like, put it in context of your situation and what you're trying to do and figure out if it's the best thing for...
Sure. You don't even think.
No. You just cry out for help. That's the, like, gut go-to thing.
I mean, that's what the Martha did when she found her the next morning.
Exactly.
Right.
So now that we know, you know, kind of referring back to what Fred said, not to give Fred any credit for anything, but Gilead changes people, and clearly June is...
Made her colder.
Right. And, but again, me, looking back on it, sorry. I don't know. That's just me. Like,
I get that you have little sympathy for Eleanor given the hand that she played in Gilead.
Well, and it's not that I don't feel sympathy for that character.
Sure.
But I think that she, you know, was...
Had her own challenges.
Definitely had her own challenges, but maybe at her core had a good heart for people and just found herself in the situation. But that's not totally the case because she was part of all of this, and regardless of what she was promised and going to have to do and not do,
right,
when she got into Gilead, she was still part of
it, yeah,
the beginning of it, and could have walked away at any time.
I still feel much more understanding for her situation compared to somebody like Mrs. Putnam or, you know, any of the other wives that were less of an orchestrator than Serena Joy was, because we don't know anything about her state at that time.
Sure.
We don't know if she was with it. I mean, I would imagine one of the first things that you no longer have when society starts falling apart is your medication.
Right. I don't know. Maybe Lawrence stocked up on it as much as he could prior to that. That has been 5 years. I don't know. So we'll see. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see the variety of opinions on what people feel about June. What people feel
definitely
about, you know, would you have done the same thing? I don't think I would have, just because my gut reaction to that would have been to do what you normally do, which is try and get help. But I also don't know, after going through all the things she's gone through and being in the mindset she's in, if that would be my gut reaction anymore. I don't know.
True.
Does change.
Never know until you're in the situation.
That is correct.
Very true.
Alright, so back to Canada.
Serena gets
palatial, prison estates. Serena's sitting in a chair, staring at her ring, trying to decide. I don't know what she's thinking. oh, I'm not married anymore, I just sold out my husband. The captain, he brings her pizza, because apparently the food sucks in prison, as he says. He also brings...
And why should she have to suffer by eating prison food?
I mean, you know.
Get her a Whole Foods in there.
That could be.
Go get her, yeah, no.
Clearly
she
likes her.
He got a thing for her. Or at least he's playing it that way.
I'm going with Tiana.
I think
he has a genuine thing, not a playing thing.
Interesting. I don't think so.
Fair enough.
So he brings her some newspapers, because she hasn't read in a while.
Legally. That made me happy a little bit. Not that I like Serena.
Not only a few newspapers.
Yeah, that everybody should be able to read.
Right.
A big fat stack of newspapers. And, you know, they flirt with a little bit, and she's kind of digging it, I think. She's kind of feeling it. At least that's the opinion I got. All right, so now...
Excuse
back
me.
To the Lawrence's house. Prepping for what we find later is the memorial for Eleanor.
Sure.
Lawrence is upset. And so him and June are kind of trading these pleasantry wine stories, trying to figure out how to talk to each other anymore and deal with this situation that both of them are clearly upset by. But Lawrence does let us know that the border will remain open. So we got that to happen.
Yeah.
And he's kind of saying that it's hard... You know, she's wondering how he did that because they were so gung-ho on closing the border and trying to get all this shit to happen against Canada. And he said it's, you know, it's hard to argue with a man who's in mourning. So apparently they give him a little leeway since his wife just passed away. And June, like, kind of shines it on enough here, but not really. Like, in the end of this episode with the look that they exchange, I still can't figure out. Like, I still don't know what happens there. But... The next part of this is the wife memorial, which is kind of playing on the opposite side of the handmaid's memorial from last year where we were at their funeral. And so this is interesting because pretty much the handmaid's service was just handmaids. So here we get everybody, right? So it's wives, it's commanders, it's the handmaids, it's Aunt Lydia, mm-hmm. and the Marthas. And so it was interesting to see, and they only do a brief shot of it kind of from overhead, is all the men are in front, then the wives, then June, who I think is the only handmaid there. And then the rest of everybody else, which is Lydia, is kind of with her.
Yeah, I wondered if the wives are, like, are compelled to go, like the handmaids are when it's a handmaid funeral, or if the wives really, like, have any choice.
Because there was probably...
Because surely the commanders do, right?
20 or so of them in there, I'd say. Yeah. 16 to 20. Lydia and Lady Putnam and the husbands and the wives, and one arm Putnam, he's in charge of the service.
And yeah, so, is he, like, a minister now? What's
up with
that?
I think they all kind of probably are.
It's so weird.
I mean, it's a theocracy, so, you know.
But wasn't it, like, somebody we had never seen before for the weddings and stuff?
Yeah, it was some priest.
It was some, like, more religious-seeming individual.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know who makes that decision.
Bruce, probably.
So they bury her, and they bury her in a blue coffin. They go all the way to the end with the
toilet.
So I guess, you know, in future generations, if somebody digs them up and is like, oh, is this a wife or a
handmaid? That was
just so you know.
Weird.
Yeah, super
I try to remember,
weird.
I guess the handmaid coffin red?
I don't remember. Now I kind of want to go back and
see. I feel like I would have remembered, though.
But that was, I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it was really next level
commitment. Taking this to the full extent that we did.
Yes.
And so June goes up to Lawrence after the service, and she's like, would you rather be alone? And then... She pulls... Okay, so there's a couple of interesting things about this to me. And I, again... She walks up to him, and at first she's kind of standing behind him, off to the left. But then when she talks to him, she kind of walks up even with him. Which I thought was kind of symbolic, given the nature of the show and the female-male...
I just kept thinking, like, is somebody going to see her and be like, what is going on?
And so she kind of
comes up... seems too friendly.
She assumes the same posture as him, which I thought was weird, although she's a left-over-righty person, which says a lot about her. Did you know that's the way you...
No.
Yeah.
I... No.
And they exchange this look, and because he's Lawrence, because he's Bradley Whitford, and he's a fantastic actor, I have zero idea of what the fuck this look means. It could range from anything of, this is awful, I can't wait till this is over, to, I know that you know that my wife's dead and didn't do anything to save her. I've also seen a couple people online that said that they're both afraid that the other one knows that they didn't check on her Like, there's some theory that he checked on her, too, and didn't say anything before June got
I took
there.
It as mutual guilt feelings.
Sure, I
generally.
Took, yeah, my like, vibe was like, we could have done more. Both
yeah,
of us could have done
totally.
More. We knew what state she was in when right. she went up the stairs.
Because in the kitchen, yeah. in that scene before, they both say,
and
he
even,
says, I could have checked on her, and June quips back, I could have checked on her, too. And they
yeah.
kind of have this moment where, like,
it was,
again, he makes yeah. these facial expressions that I don't quite know what they mean, like, because we're in Gilead, and I don't know if that means I want to kill you because I know that you could have saved my wife. To me, it was... It couldn't tell if it was... You didn't get anger or, like, resentment out of any of that. I just didn't understand... I couldn't quite pin it down,
yeah.
what he was really feeling. In that.
I didn't get the sense that he was
enigma.
Placing responsibility on her.
Because, I mean, now, seemingly, if he wanted to, depending on how he's feeling, he could shut the whole thing down. I mean, it depends on, you know, you're a grieving husband whose wife... Who was the, really the only reason that he was really going along with any of this in the first place was her.
I know.
To get her out.
I thought
so,
about that.
Yeah, I was worried that he was going to kill himself after this.
Hmm. Interesting. And that could still be an option.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't know what happens next week.
Yeah, I mean, because now it's, is he still in for her plan? Because you know, he has seemingly no stake in it.
That is what she would want him to do, though. Save
that,
the children.
That's the only thing you got going is that he knows that Eleanor would have wanted him to help get the children out. So that part we do have going for us. If you're just going off of, if he goes like full on angry,
bereaved husband,
and like backlashes against everyone, then that's bad news. But I don't know. I don't know where.
Last thing they need is another angry commander.
Right. Well, and you know he's got all the leverage to do it because again, Fred's gone, Winslow's gone. He's the you know big dog at this point, seemingly. Calling all the shots, and she's gone. She was the only thing kind of anchoring him to any kind of humanity.
I'm gonna watch it ASAP.
Same.
Yeah.
None of
us has watched the finale.
I'm very excited to
watch
the finale.
We've been very good this season about
not watching ahead.
I know.
I felt
I'm so proud of us, guys.
We talked about it before the season started, and we just felt it was weird trying to not talk about the next episode while we're
yeah.
trying to talk about the current
episode.
It gets
confusing, too. Like, trying to remember what you are supposed to
yes.
know versus what you actually
well,
know
especially
is just
show.
So tough. Like, we're not professionals.
Yeah.
Come on.
No. We're in a basement.
Yes. We're just here hanging out, talking about the show like you are. Give us your opinion, because I want to know what you thought about the look from Lawrence and to June. I just still don't know where that's going to go. And I haven't even watched, like, I don't even watch the trailers, but the spoilers usually for
yeah,
the next episode.
I don't either.
I just like to see where it's going to go.
I don't either.
I like to be in the moment. But I know, like, the second the show's done, like, the Israeli trailer comes out, like, 4 seconds after the show's over. People are, like, freaking out.
Yeah, so, the Israeli trailer always shows more. Right?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I still don't know why that is, but that's for another show.
I don't know.
All in all, again, another show where we have more questions than answers. But we got to see some good stuff. Moira throwing down to Serena.
Yeah, we had Moira, we had Rita.
Yeah.
All my favorites were back.
The one thing I didn't note was when they were talking about the plane, they kind of real-timed it in that the plane's going to be there in 7 days, which just happens to coincide with when
the
show
finale.
Will be on next week. So,
what
isn't
a
that
coincidence.
Convenient, as they would say?
Church lady.
Church lady. So, yeah, well, yeah, it's all going to go down next week. I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know where it goes. What happens? Because we still got to figure out what's coming on the big plane that the Marthas were very intent to let June know, hey, we got some shit
going. Oh, yeah,
going.
I forgot about that.
Right?
Like, it's coming because of that stuff.
Well, here's all the balls we got.
And they want
it. We got to figure out, is Lauren still on board with the plane in the first place? Or
fully.
Is he going to go full rogue angry husband? What's going to happen with Fred and Serena if we find any more about that? What is going to be June's state of mind? I mean, and she's... clearly upset with the fact that she had, in her head, had to let Eleanor die in order to proceed with her plan. What's coming in on the big plane in the first place that the Marthas were very insistent to let Jude know that she should not fuck with their plan, so they won't fuck with hers. And how does all this shit go down when they try and put it in place next week?
What if what's his name from Jezebel's like is just
Billy?
What if he's working late or something and he just yeah. like can't get there? What happens?
He won't be.
Billy seems.
People do die at very, you know, inopportune times in this show.
That's very
good point.
Very true. We haven't exactly had the best luck with plane-based escapes.
Oh, yeah,
true.
I forgot about the other plane.
So,
true.
We'll see. That one was heartbreaking.
That was horrible.
That was awful.
Can't do that again.
Super awful. No.
So close.
Yeah, we need a little something. And we know June's not getting out, because she's still got to find Hannah. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. They're barreling towards a very, very intense, interesting finale. It'd be interesting to see, A, how long it is, and
I was thinking
B, what
that.
The hell goes down. But,
I was wondering about
so,
that.
So, hit us up on the internets and the social medias and tell us what you thought. And check out the Bruce Miller interview. It is out there.
It's great.
You can learn all the things. So, thank you again.
He's awesome, as always.
Any last words before we go? Everybody's good?
I want to see more Moira and Rita. I don't know. I don't know if that has worked into the finale, but I really hope so.
We're going to find out. All right, until next week. One episode left.
See you then.
Bye-bye.